Yay.
Good job.
Hot waffles.
And we get to hear you eat.
Mm-hmm. They're delicious.
Watching it for a sec. Making sure. Oh, did y'all see my shirt last time?
Don't pay attention. I saw it. What was it?
I don't remember.
I edited it.
I know, right?
It was the vampire one.
Mm. I'll show it. Look it up, Christine.
Okay, fine. I'll look it up.
It's hard to see because of where my mic is, but when I would kept getting up, you should be able to see it.
You wearing something funny today?
No, just a Mandalorian shirt, but it's solid. It's black on black.
Black on black. Somehow that feels racist. Yeah, miracle. Skip ad. Yep.
Wait. She. Come back, Brian.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Man.
Oh, Jackie Daytona. Yeah, you were talking about you. Okay.
I wore it last week. I can't wait. I didn't tell y'all on purpose. I was waiting to see if y'all.
Okay.
Yeah, I got busy and forgot to mention that. Mention it. It made me look up like on Redbubble, because I was also looking for just random shirts, and that was one that came to mind. But yeah, you guys ready? I guess. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, wow. That was a really loud pop.
Heard that.
Yeah, like crazy. Let's try that again.
Okay.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Anime Versal Reviews podcast from LRM's Genreverse Podcast Network, LRMonline.com, Genreverse.com, and the LRM YouTube channel. We are sponsored by the good folks over at Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. Link in the description box. Commercial later on. I am Kyle Malone. This is Christine. The other guy is Brian. And yeah, we're here to talk anime as usual. Guys, how's it going? Brian first. I've already talked to you.
Hey, I'm just adjusting my table, so there's a lot of movement on my end.
That's all good.
Yeah, doing good, man. I'm very, very happy about what we're about to talk about. I had good. A hell of a time. Good. Yeah.
Good to hear, man. We're going to be talking about weathering with you guys and with all of you out there listening. If you haven't yet hit the subscribe or follow button, however you're YouTube or Spotify or something, take a minute and do that. Like, I should have taken a minute and finished this waffle before we started, but whatever. we are talking weathering with you. Like I said, one cool thing about this movie is we got to screen it.
Mm-hmm.
To review it before it came out, and to prep for an interview with the band that did the soundtrack for this and Shinkai's last film before this, Your Name, the Radwimps, an amazing band. If you've heard if you've seen Your Name, you know the band. They had lots of albums, but before that, got them all. They have albums after that, got all those. Just released another album this year. It's amazing movie. I like to call it, like, happy Your Name. Like, it's happier. Like, yeah, there's still some sad stuff, but, like, if you follow Shinkai's freaking, Makoto Shinkai's, films from, like, was it, like, 10 centimeters per second or whatever it's called, or 8 centimeters a second, and, all the way through, you're just like, dude, like, who wronged you? Like, have you ever had a happy relationship or just no relationship, all unrequited love? Like, what's going on? But this one was actually a bit happier. Brian had never seen it, so I absolutely want to start with Brian's initial reaction to Weathering with You.
It's funny because I went into it, Your Name. I'm like, okay, it's got a lot to measure up to. I somewhat knew the plot, but not really. And, as it kept going and going, I was just like, like you said, I'm like, my God, man, it's a love story that just feels so genuine. And by the end of it, you got your fist in the air and you're like, go, 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 you know. Like, there's a moment where I think I may have vocally yelled out, yeah, go, go. Yeah, it's just so well done. Beautiful film, not just visually, but just the writing, you know, the performances, the story. Yeah, it was a perfect movie to watch going into the holiday season, oddly enough, I felt.
I can see that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Christine, you and I got to screen this. We were pretty excited. We were already fans of the filmmaker, fans of other anime, of course. And what did you kind of think watching it again this time around?
It's still just as beautiful. I really love this movie. I mentioned on the Daily Cog that Hina falling is my wallpaper on my computer. It's just so pretty, and it's got such great moments, and kind of sucked because, like, near the end when they're falling, mm-hmm. Like, our son kept needing stuff, and it's like, this is the best part, and I just want to watch it, and you know like, just dive in, and it's like I keep getting pulled out, and but yeah, it's got a lot of cute moments, and it's such a sweet movie.
Yeah, I'm mostly the same. This is one of those, like, feel good movies, like one of those movies you put on, like, your comfort list, like Wreck-It Ralph for me. Like, I could be having the world's worst day, throw on Wreck-It Ralph, and it's gonna get at least a little bit better, if not a lot. This is one of those movies too, where even as we'll get into it, as we start talking the movie and some of the themes, like, even the bad stuff that happens, you're still like, it's not that bad. Like, I can
it's
still
not half the town yeah dying
like
bad.
You like... can you can cope with this movie because it's fantastical as it is. It's very, very grounded in the emotions and in the earthly things that the kids and the adults are facing are all very, very realistic.
I'll piggyback on that. Like, I do agree, but both films, I don't want to keep going back and forth, but there is that sort of apocalyptic doom feeling.
Oh, yeah.
And this film has it too, but it's oddly, it's more lighthearted. Mm-hmm. Because the, you know, the concept of, you know, what won't go into it, but the flooding and just all that is like, yeah, that's bad. And it's handled more, like I said, gently, and everybody's just like, yeah, this, you know, just part of a cycle. And
yeah, that's what I was gonna say. The line there at the end with one of the Easter eggs of the film, a certain someone's grandmother, Taki from Your Name, she's like, you know, hey, this place was all underwater once, as far as I'm concerned, nature's just coming back.
Yeah. It's not that big a deal. It's just destruction of property and you just move. So
yeah, that's kind of how they're throwing it out there, but there's a lot of theming that goes into it, but it's very, very cool. I loved it this time as much as I did the first time. And yeah, I guess we could go ahead and start breaking this thing apart, because, you know, that's what we do on these types of reviews. A lot of themes go into this movie, but one of the biggest ones, and it kind of has juxtaposition thing going on with it, and it's that idea of destiny and breaking free from it, but also the ideas of accepting certain parts of destiny. It's weird how they juxtapose where and when people will be willing to break that and why. I found that very, very cool. That's one we'll probably hit on quite a bit through this. A couple other things: youthful optimism, meeting adult you know issues, and how Hina carries on after her mother passes versus Hodoka, who basically just is pent up mm-hmm. and tired of being in one place and runs away, you know, thinking I can go make it and make it on my own. And
yeah, two characters on a similar path, but for different mm-hmm. reasons.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I noticed that, you know, Hodaka has bandages on him. So it's, I feel like he's running away from someone who's been hurting him. And then you see, like, when he gets hit, he just takes it. So either it's like a bully at school or issues at home, but yeah, you know, I mean, so it's
potentially,
you know, that does affect how people.
But he goes, but the reason why I kind of took it as maybe he's just a scrapper, like the pent up stuff going on his home island is because at the end when he gets the probation and all of that, he does just stay. He does the 3 years, mm-hmm. and he seems fine coming out of it. So in my mind, he was maybe a scrapper and matured in Tokyo, went back and was good to go. But you're right. That is a possibility. Brian, did you?
Oh, no, I agree. It was one of those things. I kept wondering if we were going to get those answers, because like you said, I noticed the bandages too, but it almost felt like the film was saying it's not important.
Yeah.
And so, you know, yes, he does go back and he does those years and he seems really eager to be gone. Even in those couple, he's like, I'm ready to get out of here. So for whatever reason, we're never really fully told. It wasn't for him. And, you know, he goes out on his adventure.
Adventure is a great word for it. Because one of the other big things going through this is escapism. You know, she is escaping her, you know, her situation through this ability to bring people sunshine. There's a Jawa in my pocket. Hold on, motherfucker. Goddamn. And then you have Hodaka, who's you know, trying to escape from his life, however it may really be or how he perceives it to be, into the fantasy of going to the big city and making it, you know, making it on your own. Nagi's just burying himself in pussy. I mean, that was funny. The kid, I think it's hilarious when Hodaka's on the bus. He's like, that kid's a great school. What the? It's hilarious. So I see escapism. And then one of the other ones we can't ignore is the climate, the weather, the rain, right? And you see that it's focused a lot on Japan, and they tie it to some mythology and historical relevance, but it's never really like a worldwide climate disaster. Yeah. But you can't deny that people would at least draw some parallels to it. I don't really know how much like climate change messaging in this is so much as the weather is messaging towards humans and their relationship with nature there in Japan. I don't know. Christine, did you feel it's got a broader thing or no?
No, I don't think it's that deep, you know, going global. Because it's not affecting the whole planet. It's just affecting that area. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
What do you think, Brian?
At first, I thought that's what they were doing. But then, like you said, it was very much specific to Japan. And then I was like, well, if there is some kind of message, it's just accept it. And get on with your life, you know. And honestly, that was sort of how it ended. So I don't think that was necessarily the plan. I don't know, but no, it very much it reminded me of, you know, there's a lot of Western films where, you know, you have these big disasters or things, but it's only in America, and you don't you know. And so this was similar, where it's like, no, it's coming out of Japan, and so it's a situation happening in Japan.
And I think I love how they connect it to the past, and they show that there were regions with their own weather maidens, and like I said, that whole idea of self-sacrifice and stuff will come up. I guess now would be a good time to actually, you know, explain the general synopsis of the film, which of course you guys kind of heard a little bit of it. Hodaka, guy from island, runs away from home. Maybe home is rough. Maybe he's just bored, getting into trouble. Regardless, runs away, goes to Tokyo, meets Hina, whose mother died. But the day she died, Hina went and prayed at a shrine. for some sunshine because of the rain, and it inadvertently became a sunshine girl, the weather maiden. She and Hodaka meet up. He gets a part-time job with a magazine, if you will, writing kind of tabloidish types of stories, but it leads them on the path of the sunshine girl. Mr. Suga's the gentleman that runs the magazine. Natsumi, she's cool. She's her, like, his cousin or whatever. There's a daughter. You meet all these side people, but the real thing is just these two people, Hodaka and Hina, slowly throughout this friendship business relationship falling truly in love with each other. To the point that when they find out that, yeah, she is basically a human sacrifice, that all this rain that's been billowing is basically been waiting on her to absorb enough, or, you know, do enough of the work to be sacrificed, and then the sun will come back for everyone. And in the end of the day, there's some cops involved and stuff. Hodaka goes up and straight up, fuck the world, well, fuck Japan at least, Tokyo.
Yeah.
I want my girl, and she's like, you know what? Fuck it. I want you to, dude. And they say, screw destiny, screw all of it. And it's just this really beautiful love story. I mean, you're people want to maybe think, oh, what about all the flooding and property loss? I mean, but people were aware, and it wasn't like it all, you know, went to hell super, super fast. So you hope people get out, and the movie doesn't even give you a chance to ponder those things. I think those are all like Western things that come up in mind. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's just this really, really good feel good love story where, for once, they didn't have to find each other at random. They didn't have to hope on fate to bring them back together. He was going to go to where he suspected she would be three years after these events when he returns to Tokyo and happens to bump into her on the way there. Beautiful moment. Love it. And Whew. Let's talk about some of those themes, Brian. Breaking free and destiny, man. Like, that is all in throughout this movie, and something that you see in a lot of anime. How's it hitting for you with this one, man?
Yeah, it was interesting. There was no, yet again, if this had been a Western film, there would have been a moment of discussion about the morality of his decision.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do that. And chances are he would have decided not to for the greater good, but it would have worked out anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking, I bet that's exactly how it would have played, where in this it's just like, nah, screw this. I'm pursuing love. This is what I want. And what happens, happens. And then going into the whole idea of the cycles and just sort of accepting it and saying, no, this is part of it. Him accepting the idea that he wants to pursue love was mm-hmm. part of it. So I do think it is interesting that there was no morality discussion, though. I kept thinking about that the whole time, but the film's like, no, we're not going into that.
I know, yeah. Right? I mean, Mr. Suga attacks the cops so that way Hodaka can try to get to her.
Yep.
To Hina. So it's like everyone's just like, screw it. Let's run from the cops.
Yeah,
you know? I love all that stuff. That's another great, you know, and I'm curious to what y'all think about it. So we get the two scenes where he pulls the gun.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one, you know, was there, but the second one was very intense because I didn't know what was going to happen. I was like, oh, no. You know, he's surrounded by cops. Everybody's got guns out. And I'm like, what's he going to do? And, it worked out. But why do you I was curious, why did they use such an extreme thing in the story? Because there are, you know, it felt like it felt different than the rest of the film, that particular scene.
The only thing, because it is, when you think about it, you're like, okay, sure, you could have used a knife in some cases for the first bit, but when you get to that ending scene, you start trying to figure out, like, reverse writing, you know. He needs to be cornered by the cops. He needs to have some way to keep the cops off him. Mm-hmm. You just start thinking, and I don't necessarily know if it was anything more than that.
Just a plot device.
Yeah,
I was just wondering, did you think there was something symbolic about it?
No, I
kept trying to think if there was. I couldn't come up with anything. That's why I'm asking.
At first time watching the movie, I thought they might do something, especially when she's disgusted with the gun. I thought maybe we're going to see him go down this, you know, criminal path or something. Sorry. But she then walks back, and you almost forget about the gun.
Yeah.
Until he's back at that place at the end.
Yeah, it's here.
And I think it's definitely meant to invoke the gravity of what a loaded gun brings, of course. But I didn't think it was meant to be any more than that.
Mm.
You know, a gun is
showing how desperate he is to get Tahina.
Yeah.
So. And he's a kid, so, I mean, it's...
That too. Like he said, he thought it was a toy when he first found it. He's like, I was keeping it as a good luck charm, you know? He didn't even mean for it to go off when it goes off the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Christine, Destiny, and saying fuck the world, I mean, it's kind of fun to see that, right?
Well, yeah, it is. And the thing is, it's like, you know... Human life can be so valuable, and we, like, for us Americans, like, we deal with, you know, a lot of different types of, you know, natural disasters, and it's just kind of like, yeah, things get destroyed, but you can rebuild. But the people that you care about, you know, it's who you go for, and he is, you know, taking a big risk in trying to get to her. She's that important. So, but... You know, it's like I said earlier, it's just property.
Yeah.
Our stuff gets plowed through all the time.
Yeah. Well, welcome to having a kid. And also, welcome to capitalism, because we need to take a break for a word from our sponsors over at Grow Generation before we come back to talk about youthful optimism. Yay.
Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. From propagation to harvest, they have everything you need for your special garden. Grow Generation serves customers across the nation and carries a wide inventory of renowned cultivation brands. Go to www.growgeneration.com, where the pros go to grow.
And thank you guys so much for sponsoring the episode, as you usually do, Grow Generation. Link in the description box below, guys, and growgeneration.com. Youthful optimism is one of those things that you always see in anime, because it's, I mean, come on, we're always trying to appeal to something, and when you're old, you don't want to feel old, and you want to remember what it was like to be young. And I'm not talking nostalgia stuff, I'm talking about going for experiences, not Ghostbusters and Ninja Turtles and Star Wars type nostalgia, but those experiences. Brian, I know you and I, being typical army brat males, spent a lot of time out in the woods and stuff like that as kids. this movie, I had those types of fantasies as well, of going on a big adventure in a city. Did you not have that as a kid as well, Brian? In addition to playing army in the woods?
Yeah. I traveled a lot as a kid, so I was in cities and in the woods camping. I spent a lot of time outside the house. Yeah,
and when we're out there in the woods, and I'll bring the city part in with you as well. When we're out there in the woods, we're always playing army, we're playing Predator or some weird survival games, camping. You mentioned I've done that, and we're always optimistic about our ability to handle nature. What if a bear attacks? What if a wild cat comes in? And those types of fantasies play out, but when you actually hit the woodline, there's bugs. there's humidity down in Fort Benning, Georgia. There's rough ground, not clean water, no indoor plumbing. Like, it just smacks you in the face all of a sudden, reality. And those things about the well, Brian, go ahead and bounce off that, and then we'll go into city type fantasy adventures.
In terms of what? The
oh, I was just kind of, you know, this your experiences with meeting when your youthful optimism got smacked down in the dirt out there in outdoor world.
You know, it was funny because we used to, you know, like you said, used to build forts or just, I don't know, there was always a sense of you'd leave your house, you'd go out into the woods and something cool was going to happen. There was always going to be an adventure. And I remember when I got, I forget what grade, sixth, seventh grade-ish, a lot of my friends had moved. This was right before I moved. And there was this summer where almost I had no one. And I remember I stayed in the house almost that entire, I remember that summer vividly. I watched MASH and Sailor Moon, like also, they were on TV like every day.
That's cool.
It was a weird TV block. But anyways, I'm bringing up that summer because that was the one where I stopped going outside the way I used to. And so there was sort of that reality of, I don't know, that I guess the magic died when everybody left in a weird way. And yeah.
Yeah. Now, Christine, talking about that other type of thing, Hodaka, for example, very similar to Mitsuha. And your name, where coming from outside of a big city, wanting to make it in that big city, you've always talked about wanting to move to New York and stuff. After having been in New York and San Diego and other large cities, what was it like for your youthful optimism to meet walking down the streets of Hell's Kitchen and taking subways and all that?
To me, it was a little different because, of course, I did it as an adult. You know, growing up with the military, it's with the army, we're always in small places, and it sucks. Fort Polk sucks. Fort Campbell isn't as bad, but like sucks. Fort Drum
sucks.
So Stewart, it's, yeah, Fort sucks. Stewart sucks. You know,
Bennings sucks.
Yes,
you were in a Drum. Like I didn't know. Were you at Drum?
No, we're just saying that. Oh, yeah. Just places.
No, I'm just, I just know that it's small. It's
upstate New York.
Cold.
Yeah, there's
small. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, I knew that about the place. And
we,
I was like,
we had Ord at Monterey Bay, California, which, fuck, nice. I was there before it
heard
shut
about
down.
It and never got to go.
Carson is nice.
Yes, and Fort Lewis.
That's it. The Army's just up the anyway.
Yeah, Fort Campbell is meh in comparison to other places.
I didn't hate Bragg. I was at Bragg for a while.
Vietnam. Anyways.
Yeah, yeah. Well.
Yes. Yeah, so like for me it was back like I wanna get to the city. Like Mitsuha and Hodaka wanted to. But you know, the urban jungle is a little different. For me, like I had already known about what it would kind of be like, so I didn't have this, oh, it's gonna be magical New York City, and you know, it's like, yeah, I know that there's homeless people there, I know that, you know, not everyone's gonna be, you know, bright and sunny like it is, because my parents are from Mississippi. Yeah. And it's like you can't leave the house without a smile on your face, like you can't leave your manners at home kind of thing. So it's kind of like people just doing them. So I think, you know, it was just a little different for me. So I kind of already knew what to expect. I think where it changed was actually when we were at when we were in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
That was very different for me because I was there as a kid and I don't really remember too much. But like a German person would bump into you and, you know, wouldn't say sorry, and where I was from, you always said sorry, even if it wasn't your fault.
It's not rude.
It's just, oh, you're fine.
You
I'll
don't
go
say
about
excuse
my way.
Me.
And,
yeah.
Yeah,
and
so I did eventually get used to it. But at first, I was like, I cannot believe that just happened, kind of thing, because everyone where I was from is like too friendly. So it's like, I guess that's why a lot of you know, people outside of America are like, y'all are too nice.
Yeah.
It's kind of
And we're like, no,
fishy.
No, we're not. We're all assholes.
Yes, like, eh, not really.
And that's just us comparing it ourselves to everyone else, where it's not necessarily them being assholes. They're just not beat over the head with be nice to everyone.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was shock as an adult, but, you know, it wasn't, you know, like that as a kid. But yeah, I did want so badly to move to a big city. I liked it so much better than, you know, being, you know, in a place where there's not much to do and everything. It's like you have to get in a car to drive somewhere. It's incredibly annoying.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah.
Getting over towards one of the last things to really talk about thematically is the act of being selfish, making choices for yourself. And not for others. You know, Hina spends the whole movie doing things for other people, doing things for her brother, doing things for as the sunshine girl, trying to do things for her mom there at the beginning. And at the end of the day, it's a selfish choice that they decide to make. And you know, I keep there's a line from a song from the band Bayside. And it's I can never say I'm truly free until I stop replacing I with we. I might have messed up a word or two there, but there's some truth to that. And often I keep telling people, I used to say it in the military all the time, you can't take care of others if you don't take care of yourself. And putting the mission first sometimes requires you to put yourself first. So here we have this ultimate thing, and I love the line that Hodaka says to Hina after he grabs her from the Cloud City, Empire. But after he grabs her from there, he's like, "Pray for yourself."
Yeah,
I think that's a very very powerful thing, and the Westerner in me, of course, wants to analyze that and be like, you know, here's a female character that has played a motherly role, the self-sacrificing role, and that's a pretty powerful and impactful thing to say, pray for yourself, and she does. You don't have to look at it from the Western point of view if you don't want to, because it's just a human thing to do that, to say I'm tired, I'm taking a break, Christine. When that moment comes, like, go talk.
Oh yeah, I've experienced the, well, of course, as a mom, where it's like you're skipping meals because it's like you're doing stuff for other people, mostly the kid, and it's like, you know, it's like normal to skip breakfast because you've worked so hard to get your kid breakfast and then get them situated to where they need to be, get them ready for the day. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, it's lunchtime and I've done all this work and I haven't even eaten yet, you know? So it's, it was a sweet moment. So yeah, like I like how he had done that, where it's like, he had said even before, when they were in the hotel, you know, like, we're just going to stop doing this. And you're going to get back to normal, even though that didn't happen. But he's like, you know, we're done, you know, with that part. And, you know, we need to take care of you. But yeah, she's done a lot for everyone. Very sweet girl. But yeah, sometimes you just have to just be like a little selfish and like, no, I think I'm going to do this, you know. So I would love to see, you know, like there would be like, you know, comments from like, you know, the makers of this, where it's like, I don't know. I guess
you want to
know
Pottermore moment where you get to ask Makoto Shinkai what, you know,
exactly, like
5 years after they meet again, what's going on?
Yeah, where's she at? How's she doing? You know, kind of thing.
Yeah, Brian, that big climatic moment with a very very selfish decision, man. Like, it's what's it like for you to see a climatic moment in that tone in a movie, because you don't see it that often.
It's interesting because even though it is somewhat of a selfish decision, mm-hmm. there's still a consequence that they all have to pay. Mm-hmm. You know, going back to what I was talking about, you know, my childhood and everything, there is a moment in the film where it's like, okay, we've embraced the idea of love, but we all sort of have to pay a penance for that. You know, yes. We have the time jump. Everyone grows up. Everyone changes.
Someone had to go to court, arrested.
Exactly. So there is a give and take to that decision as well. And somewhat of, and the sacrifice of, I love you, I want to be with you, but I can't see you for X amount of years. I forget how many years.
Mm-hmm. Three.
Three. Yeah. And so that's interesting as well, that they were in a weird situation at the end because everything kept closing in on them. The cops, mm-hmm. the idea that they were too young, they couldn't be out on their own. And it finally, you know, obviously, like I said, he made the decision for love, but he still had to pay a price. And
yeah,
and like, you know, similar to, you get to your name, you get to that ending and you're just smiling, but then it's like, oh, you know, I want to know what happens next.
Yeah.
Here they get that beautiful, like I said, he comes back to Tokyo, sees Suga and he's like, yeah, dude, just go, you know where she's at. Go see her. And,
almost like he's scared.
Yeah,
you know,
nervous. Yeah. He says he hadn't talked to her. You know, he did his probation. He stayed on the island. He was dedicated to doing it right and getting back there. And but when it's funny when Taki's grandmother. Did you notice the your name character?
Well, I hadn't seen it in a while. I did Google. Okay. Eggs after finishing because you told me there were some. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, Mitsuru's yes. At the store where he buys the ring. And Taki is there with his grandma, and I'm guessing that's before they meet back up. Like,
yeah,
that's my guess. But anyways, such a great movie. Oh, it's so heartbreaking. This movie gets you a much better ending though. I like when he's like. He had talked to the grandma about the cycle, and Suga's like, man, you didn't do this shit. Get the fuck out of here. And he's like, no. He sees her, and he's like, no. We did this. We made a choice. This is the result of that choice. Cycles be damned. We did this. And he sees her. She sees him. Happy happy ending with a embrace, not just to see each other and pfft. End credits.
That would be horrible if they did it that way.
Yeah, that's like your name. You're just like, oh my god, would you guys fucking get just no, bring the scream back.
Yeah.
But that part of it is why I focus so much on it being a, even though yeah they pay a price. There's that is a very very selfish thing, and we've all got. I love that someone can put that on screen in a way that hopefully people can put, because it's a healthy thing to do, you know, not necessarily drowning Tokyo, but you know,
imagine
a healthy thing to do
if
to take
one,
care of yourself.
Can you imagine if when they got back, she didn't remember the summer, like her mind, you know what I mean? Like none of it happened before.
Why are you staring at me like that? Who are you?
I would have been like, this is bullshit. Like, come on, guy. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, but it was really sweet that he was afraid to see her, you know, because it's like with 3 years no contact, it's like, does she feel the same? And he's so scared to see that. And I do like how it ended. Very sweet, obviously. You know, embrace.
Yeah.
And then done.
Yeah. Anything else about themes before we run through some of these characters real quick, which we'll touch on themes again with some of them? No? Okay, cool. We're moving on to these awesome characters. You know, we talked about Hodoka and Hina quite a bit, but I just want to let Christine, those two, was there anything else specifically you wanted to talk about on them or bring up for Brian or my opinion?
No.
Brian, did you have any other notes on the main characters?
No.
Okay. Neither did I. They're both great characters. I like Suga, the publisher guy that saves Hodoka first on the ferry over to Tokyo from his island. He was, you know, going to fall. He went to go see the rain wall hit. and Sugus saves him. He's a stereotype of the cool guy, but the can't keep out of his own way.
Yeah,
he's got this fledgling business. He's got a estranged family. His daughter, he only gets to see her at certain times. And he's got to work, live in, I think it's his cousin, maybe cousin-in-law, former cousin-in-law, or something like that.
Something. They're related
not,
somehow.
Natsumi, she's there.
Niece, yeah.
Niece, yeah. Natsumi's there as well. And he's just there to be that vehicle to help Hodaka along, but he still manages to be more in certain scenes. Like when he's trying to get Hodaka out, like cutting him off, moments where he's like, yeah, I'm only paying him X amount of money, but think he's getting his food, he's got a place to live. He's been teaching this kid all the way through this movie, and the big climatic moment with him, you know, he goes to actually do the right and legal thing, goes to help try to make sure the cops don't overreact and speak with Hodaka and kind of get him to hopefully turn himself in. But at the end of the day, he kind of takes a leap of faith that Hodaka's telling the truth, and he's got to get to that fucking shrine. And Suga, man, he makes a decision that I'm almost surprised to see him have a business three years later. He was a surprising side character to me. Brian, I'll go with you because I think I want Christine first.
He was, like you said, he was sort of the cool guy, but didn't quite have everything together. Had a lot of issues in his life, like dealing with his daughter, not having her around, his business not being the greatest. And yet again, going to the selfish, on one hand, he's helping this kid. On the other, he is shortchanging him a little bit. And when it comes to the point when the police get involved, he's ready to sort of kick him to the side. But then he rebounds in the end and comes to save the day. So it's sort of that back and forth. He was on a different kind of, I guess you would say, adventure or journey through the film. But also, yet again, every character in this movie goes on a journey and comes out at the end different than how it started. And
yeah,
he's mm-hmm. another good example of that. But yeah, really sort of a fun, cool uncle type character.
Yeah. Brian, I know we've gotten close to another 20 minute mark for your camera, but Christine, the Suga character, and then you can go into Natsumi from there. What you thought about her?
With Suga, I mean, yeah, he's definitely like one of those, you know, just kind of coasting through life after, I think, his wife died.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Somehow he loses custody. Grandma's taking care of the dog.
The wife died.
Yeah. The mother. I should have been clear. The mother of his kid mm-hmm. died. So you know he's kind of just like coasting through life, underachieving and not getting his crap together. Even though he should rally and try to get his daughter. But yeah, he definitely has some character growth in this. And you know, with dealing with this whole situation as well, Sunshine Girl and, you know, helping Hodaka, he finally gets his crap together and you get to see it in the end. And so yeah, there's really not much else to say on him. With Natsumi, where is she in this? I don't remember seeing her in the end, just like in a picture. But yeah, like
I don't know. I'm guessing she's out on assignment.
I don't know, but yeah, like she was trying to get a job and just hanging out at Suga's house. That
scene. This is my first choice. Your company is my first choice.
Because I mean that's what everyone does. I think probably every culture does that, where you lie in an interview, where it's like. Like when they ask questions like, why do you want to work here? Like, oh, well, I just love this. And I'm just like, it's a fast food job. Why are you asking me this question kind of thing?
I want to work here for money.
Yeah, I'm here to get paid. That's why everyone wants to work. You know, there could be fun parts to it. But yeah, it's just kind of like one of those like, hey, everyone can relate to that. Having to you know, fiddle with the truth a little bit. And then with her helping Hodaka, it was surprising when I first saw it, but I thought it was really cool that she's like, you know, like, oh, we're outlaws now, you know. Yeah. and she's cool with it, not really like, oh, well, this sucks, but okay, but you know, she's having fun with it. She's a wild character, but she's a lot of fun.
She's a lot of comedic relief. Mm-hmm. and even some unnecessary gratuitous sexuality, but it's anime. I'm gonna watch it no matter what. Brian, what about the Natsumi character? I felt like they kind of left, like Christine said at the end, it's kind of like you couldn't have shown a little bit more. Like I said, I'm just guessing she's out on assignment. What do you think? Was the character left hanging?
A little. I believe she was in that picture, right, where it showed mm-hmm. the family together, yeah, and the little girl was older.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, they didn't you know, take the time to sort of wrap up a story, but she really didn't have a story going, you know what I mean? Like, she was there, she was, you know, it was sort of that character where, you know, he's the young guy, here's this older, like, attractive woman. He's assuming that she's in a relationship with other dude, but then he finds out their family. That's a gag.
Yeah.
Played for laughs. So yeah, I would almost say she somewhat is the comic relief character to some degree in the whole film. Now, she's there for that important chase sequence at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Which was cool. Terminator 2 style. But, yeah, I agree. They thinking about it, there should have been another 2 minutes.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah,
yeah, if someone was going to slip through, it would have been her, because there wasn't a lot of, you know, work done.
And this wasn't an under 2 hour movie. It's an hour and it's under 150 with credits removed. It's like 148, 149 of story time. So yeah, you could have definitely added another minute or two to give her a more fitting send off. But you know, the only other character we talked about, the younger brother Nagi, he's there to just kind of play for kicks, have Hina a reason to be doing what she's doing.
Yeah.
I love that they made him a playboy. You know, he's got a revolving door of girls willing to cross-dress with him for him to help him escape later on. Like,
that is an amazing scene. That's just a fun little
character.
Yeah, that whole scene I love. Like, the fact that he's,
you have that much charm.
Exactly. Oh, he's captured, and the two girls come to see him, and he like gives a signal, you know, to execute the plan. Yep. And everything. You're like, wow. He at first he came up with all this, you know, to escape, and then he had people willing to play along. Like, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It was funny because it was like the girl who left was the ex, mm-hmm. and then so the girl that stayed behind is like, I can't believe you brought your ex into this. And she's undressing and taking the wig off and helping him out. And it's like, yeah, that is kind of messed up. But you know, you need someone to use as a distraction. But it was just like, she just took it. It was funny.
And I do like the youthfulness, like with the costume and the umbrella that Hodaka and Nagi used it with their Sunshine Girl bit with Hina. It's funny to see him still embrace that kind of kiddish side of things for his sister as well. So it's a nice character, not worth to spend too much time on, but something you really have to spend a bit of time on, of course, is the artwork and the music in this movie. And we'll start with art and the animation. There's a lot of good CGI in here. A lot of establishing shots use it, and it's awesome. But I wrote something down, like, how beautiful did they manage to make gray and rain? Like,
yeah,
it's stunning the way they use even the little fish and whale like creatures that you can see in it.
Yeah.
But even without a lot of light, of course, the light scenes when lights breaking through is beautiful. But man, gray and rain just is was gorgeous here, Christine.
Yeah, they had where that little boy is looking outside, and that's where he sees the little water fish. Mm-hmm. And you see the rain hit where the glass separates inside and outside, and it was just so beautifully done with that. And then, of course, you know, like seeing light shining through when the rain stops. It was very beautiful, the artwork.
Brian, they show a lot of cityscapes in here, and these are not necessarily the beautiful parts of the city. It's street level. There's trash, grime, and everything's mm-hmm. still covered in gray and rain throughout big chunks of this movie. Man, tell you, you're a big fan of artwork. We're watching Miyako-chan right now, which you said is one of your favorite looking animes that you've watched in recent years. How does this stack up to your name and other anime, especially with that weather stuff? Sorry.
Specifically the weather stuff. I kept thinking, even through the first 20 minutes of the film, I was like, was the whole point of this film an exercise in weather, animating weather? Like, I was like, it's got to be a pain in the ass. I mean, I don't know. I'm not an animator, but there were certain sequences where I'm like, man, I would have just not written it like that. I was like, I feel like, no.
It's funny.
I'm not that mean.
but yeah, there was just so much of it. And the movie's called Weathering With You, and the whole theme is constant rain. So, you know, I get it. But even little scenes, like there's a really great scene, very simple, but even it looks so well when it's flooding and he opens the door or window and the water mm-hmm. pours into the apartment or the house or the bar mm-hmm. or whatever it was. And then for the rest of the shots that there's a, you know, not quite ankle deep water mm-hmm. in those shots, but, and then the escape sequence and obviously the last, you know, the big falling sequence. So yeah, no, just absolutely gorgeous. And like you said about the city stuff, I love that kind of stuff. I like the Persona series of video games and sort of navigating the streets, or the Yakuza series. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there was a lot of, you know, that in this. And the ending when the boat comes into town and you get to see Tokyo underwater. And you're seeing, you know, the changes and everything. And I was like, oh, that's
the fact that cool. The boat is floating over the middle of the suspension bridge.
Yeah.
Like in between the towers.
Yeah, they had other cute little moments, like with the cat. You know,
I forgot about the cat,
Yeah, and then also seeing the cat grow. Like, it was mm-hmm. such a sweet little kitten, and then it's a grumpy cat in the end. all grown up and, you know, bitter looking grouchy old man, even though it's like you're not that old, but you look old.
Yeah.
And then what else was there? I was gonna say, like you were talking about the city look. It definitely, of course, it's it looks like an anime, but you know, it's showing the city grit. I liked how it looked, you know, the textures and,
you know,
grime.
Talking all beautiful, how they do all that, we can't ignore the above world, that gorgeous, beautiful light use whenever that light does shine through the clouds. But everything above the clouds is just, man, it looked, I don't even know how to word it. Like, you've got it on your wallpaper, Brian. That is just, for so little amount of, because you're looking at white, blue, and green, you know, before you get in with the creatures and stuff. I'm just talking like the clouds, right? So yeah, sure, there's gray in there, but white, blue, and green, and man, he made it look so freaking, or they made it look so epic and grand. What'd you appreciate or hate about that world?
I thought that was one of those cool things where they're establishing all this sort of lore and how this works, and then for those moments it's like, well, it's somewhat of another world, you're right, and it's like, well, we're gonna show it to you. Mm-hmm. And it's, you see things that you've not really necessarily seen done, and you know, like the dragon and just the way the way it's all focused around the weather and rain and water and clouds and all that. So visually it's very unique. You know, I can't really think of another sequence quite like that.
And the falling.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The falling is done so well. Just they even, cause falling without reference is hard, and they do show some reference, but they do it with a tumbling camera and moving people and different shots, and it's just it's amazing to see that.
Mm-hmm. And they're showing like how difficult it is for them to hold on. I mean, because you know you're going at high speeds, and you know they should have like tried to grab in a different way. You know, like hold on to one hand and then like you know try to grab, because it must be like really difficult just to link fingers, you know, interlace fingers, and fall like that. You know, it's hard to hold on, and I mean they do let go at one point, and then they have to try to get back to each other, and but yeah, it looked really cool.
And the music playing in that scene, Grand Escape, by Radwimps. It's one of the two big themes for the song. The other being, is there anything love still can do or still can't do? I can't remember the title specifically. Now, I'm not gonna lie, both soundtracks for the lat, because we could keep comparing it, may as well. Your Name and this, I'm gonna play Your Name's soundtrack more often. There's more songs there that I enjoy listening to regularly, but what I'll say here, it's so funny and pun 100% intended, from the Grand Escape theme to all of the orchestral instrumental stuff in this. It's very, very atmospheric.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that in both a weather sense, the idea of how many piano pieces are playing things that aren't in a pattern, as like raindrops don't always hit in a pattern, so you hear ding 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 ding. Mm-hmm. Ding, and the way music will stop and stutter when people are going through thought processes, just how weather can move with like the wind and things like that with quickness and then slowing down. The music is just it's phenomenal, even though I'll still listen to the other soundtrack more. What did you think about the music for this movie, Christine?
It was definitely fitting. I mean, like you were just describing it, you know, it really brought the beauty of, you know, what you're seeing, you know, to the next level. You know, you're really wrapped in this world, and it was just, I really liked it. They did a good job.
I know, Brian, you and I are a bit more on those. I don't want to say audiophile, because that's more like the actual sound quality. But you and I are also big. You listen to a lot of what's the word I'm looking?
Listen to a lot of soundtracks.
And not just that, but like rock opera stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Stuff with built-in things. So you and I constantly will hear like an instrument being used to represent something. Did you catch the weather stuff in the music? Like.
I also, and the film does, and I like, you have multiple somewhat like montages where you have a song. Mm-hmm. Playing and I like that. It almost felt episodic in a weird way, like the film was broken up by these set pieces that revolved around a song and a sequence of events. And music is extremely important in this film, you know, as you get through it. And I love when a film takes the time to build its soundtrack. It's not a throwaway. That's one of my biggest complaints about a lot of modern films. They don't give a shit about their soundtracks.
Yeah.
Or the music that's used. And I can give several examples of great films that just have, you know, mediocre soundtracks. But this is a movie that's really revolves around the music in it. And yeah, I thought it was good.
Hopefully I'll remember to link it down below. But I'll put the interview I did with the Radwimps, where I got to ask them about questions specifically for making music for this movie and how it was different on Your Name versus for this movie. And he talked about how the director had given him an idea of what the story was going to be about. And like I said, that's why I think, while sure, I think Your Name has a lot of different songs, not just the ones with lyrics, but pieces that you could put on to almost anything, right? This was written for
mm-hmm.
the wet weather, and I find it absolutely beautiful. So,
yep.
Anyways, guys, time to grade it. You know, it's really hard to compare against anything other than the creator's other works, but you also can look at Hosoda, Momoru Hosoda, the guy Mirai and Summer Wars, Belk coming up in January. This movie, I'm gonna wait actually and go with Christine first. What do you give Weathering with You?
It's like I'm gonna give it an A+.
Okay.
Yes, because they put in every little piece of this film. They gave it a lot of love and care. Nothing was more like, okay, let's just get this over with. It felt like everything, like we're gonna do our very best and make a beautiful movie. So it gets an A+ for me.
Brian?
A. I could see multiple viewings that go into an A+ potentially, but it's solid A. Yeah.
Yeah. I go with an A+ for this simple reason that it ends on a very, very happy note. By all means, Your Name is a better film, and
that's my problem. That's an A+. Yeah.
You know, this is an A+. On a bias level, I guess, because of how it leaves me feeling at the end. While I'm not saying Your Name leaves me feeling bad, it's just like I feel more complete after this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like I got a good complete story, because with Your Name, you're like, well, wait a second, because this is some fucking time travel shit going on, and your guys' memories are not the fucking same. I need some closure, and I never ever getting it, but it's still an A+, so
yeah.
But yeah, anyways, I guess that'll do it, guys. We'll wrap up. LRMonline.com, genreverse.com, LRM's genreverse podcast network, wherever you get your podcast from, and all available on our YouTube channel as well, with a lot of celebrity interviews, both Zoom and in person, and red carpet, blue carpet. I think that was an Apple thing once or some shit, but check all that out. Follow, subscribe, leave some comments, reviews if you do that type of thing. We're pushing close to 5,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel. It would be great for you guys to help us cross that line and help us get some more sweet ad revenue and keep giving you guys all this stuff for free. Things like Marvel Multiverse Mayhem, where we've been reviewing Hawkeye and the Spider-Man movies leading up to Spider-Man Homecoming. We got No Mercy coming back in January. The Dragon Review does Wheel of Time on Mondays. Cantina on Fridays. Daily Cog, Breaking Geek Radio. A lot of content, guys. So, yeah, check it all out. Brian does other things besides anime. Brian, tell him about it.
Yeah, I'm on YouTube. The channel is Pulp Mythos, and currently talking about shows like Dexter and Big Sky.
Cool. There you go. Christine, anything you want to plug?
No, you already plugged what we do together, so it's like, you know, you and that's funny. It's like, anything you got to add, Christine? No.
Okay, anyways, so, guys, yeah. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Next week will be Miracle John, episode 10, I think it is. Yeah, so bye.